I began broadcasting at WNYC on March 5th, 1985, exactly 23 years ago, and I thought of it as a stopgap job at the time, that in a few months I would return to the record business, and although I came to really love what I was able to do here, I still find it hard to believe that I've lasted so long. Well, joining me now to help me celebrate and to put things into perspective are two WNYC voices who've been here even longer, Steve Post and John Schaefer. I'm very pleased to welcome them to the show. Hello.
We also wonder how you've survived.
Considering that I have the least talent of the three of us.
Happy anniversary, by the way.
Which one of you came here first?
I don't know.
Steve, I think. We were both part of the class of 81, which was the first year of the WNYC Foundation taking over the running of the station from the city. It was you, Steve, and me, and Tim Page.
And Tim Page. Who was that? I forget Tim Page.
He's now with the Washington Post, I think.
Now he's moved on to, he's got a teaching position. But yes, for many years was the chief classical music critic of the Washington Post. He's in California now.
Now, as I said, I thought this was a temporary job. What about you?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I thought it was I'd just be here for a few months or so. Not a few decades.
Well, you know, if you remember the old studios, it was hard to believe anybody could stay here very long.
And yet, when we got here, this place was civil servants. These were lifers. I mean, these guys have been here for like 30, 40 years.
They had to take the civil service test to become broadcasters.
Right.
So anybody you heard doing the news actually had passed the civil service test.
Well, actually, it was fully qualified to be a garbage man.
There was a time when in order to be an announcer on WNYC, you had to play a musical instrument.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah, that was before our time.
A few thousand years before our time.
Well, we worked out of different studios. I was on AM and you were on FM at the time. You were working at a little hole-in-the-wall studio where you did what's called combo in the business?
Well, it wasn't quite combo. I mean, the thing I remember most about this place is the physical plant, the physical facilities, which were like nothing I had ever seen before in a radio station. It really looked like a ship's boiler room or something, and not like a radio station. Everything had these huge tubes in it, and the microphone was in a fixed place on a metal bar. There from the days when announcers used to dress in tuxedos and cup their ears and say, "This is WNYC. Next we hear."
Well, you worked out of little rooms with a lot of stuff. I worked out of... Go ahead, John. You
want
to say something?
Well, just to pick up on what Steve was saying. So, you know, we had this kind of microphone in a fixed position. This is very early on. This did change. And you looked through the glass at your engineer, who, if you were lucky and he was awake, would be ready to actually play the record that you were about to introduce.
I remember I said to the engineer, I said, "Now, I want to fade down the music and I want to introduce the program over it." I said something like, "You mean you want to have two things on the radio at one time?" Well, as I remember, most the engineers mostly typed these incredible, intricate logs. They sat out, you'd see them out in the studio typing.
Now, Steve, you had been at WBAI and some other radio stations before you came here. In your case, John, where had you been before?
WFUV. Mm-hmm. So the two proving grounds from which a lot of WNYC staffers over the years have come. To universally appalled response when you used to see those old studios. Now, in the mid to late 80s, you remember this, Leonard, we moved into the studios we are now in where everything was digitally routed and stuff. So basically WNYC went from tubes and wires to digital. We skipped the transistor age entirely.
But I have to tell you about the studio I worked at. I'm sure you peeked into it once in a while. It was this immense room, and I sat with guests, sometimes very famous guests, at a table that was covered in carpet that probably had more coffee stains than anybody could imagine. The mics were screwed into this board, which was on horses, wooden horses. It wasn't a real table. And behind me was the piano that is now in your studio, John, but untuned in those days. And in the same room, on the other side of the room, was my audio engineer, Kate Borger. So if she dropped anything, you heard it on mic. And there's all this big room. So I was telling the story to the trade publication of Public Radio Currents. And I said, there I was in this immense room, and blah, blah, blah. And the article came out, and it said, Leonard Lopate says that when he first started working at WNYC, he worked out of a men's room. So I've stopped saying immense from now on. I say huge. I worked in this huge room. Isn't that wild?
As I recall, there wasn't much soundproofing in your studio either.
No. There was no soundproofing. And there was a banner behind us that said WNYC. That was the all-important thing. And people would walk in and look at this place and wonder what they had committed themselves to. Why am I doing this show? When I started out...
Committed is the right word.
It was Senior Edition. It was called Senior Edition. Pagin Fitzgerald was the co-host for an hour and a half, and then I did 2.5 hours on my own. We followed Dick Estelle reading from the
Rainbow or whatever that was called.
He used to read a chapter or whatever, a half hour a day from a book that he would read until its completion. And maybe we should hear a little clip of Pagin from that time with a snippet of Kate Borger, who was our board operator and also a participant in the talk.
I do something that affects two or three of my friends so that they practically fall off their chairs, particularly Kathy Novak. I have, since early girlhood, every time I have sat down to a meal where a quarter of a lemon or lemon slices are served as a garnish, I immediately pick up the quartered lemon or the lemon slices and eat them with relish. Well, that sends Kathy into almost hysterics to see anybody eat anything so sour as a lemon.
Especially with relish on it. Yeah. That sounds like really two strange tastes combined.
Well, and it's, so many things, unfortunately for my taste, are garnished with lemon quarters or lemon slices. But
Pagin, I'm just like you. I do that as well.
You do?
I don't grab everybody else's lemon. What I'll do is I'll wait until the meal is halfway gone, and I look over at that lemon and I'll ask, does anybody want that?
I do the same thing, Lenny, and I also carry it beyond that for cocktails. If it's some cocktail that either a lemon, preferably a lemon or even an orange slice.
Mm-hmm. I'll eat everybody's.
I'll eat everyone's.
And you eat the peel as well, I'll bet, just
of course.
As I do. Oh, yes.
Well, so the show hasn't changed all that much.
Wow.
Riveting stuff.
Nostalgia. Nostalgia reigns supreme here.
Those were the old days.
Very old days.
Steve, didn't the program director at the time offer you the job as host, or at least ask you to consider taking over as the host of Senior Edition while I was trying out?
Vaguely, yes, but they all knew that I was not really well-read enough to handle the job, and I knew it too.
Actually,
we just wanted to give you a scare.
And I'm sure that was the case. I understand you came in at a point where I was talking about German emigres and their impact on America, Hannah Arendt and Theodor Adorno, and you heard that and you said, I can't do that. Well, you wouldn't have had to have done it, Steve. You could have had this job.
Can I have it now?
Sure.
I was just talking to one of the bosses out there, and it appears I have no job now, so...
Oh, come on. Steve Post, host of The No Show, is with me. John Schaefer, host of Soundcheck and New Sounds. And this is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. I'm celebrating my 23rd year here. Both of you, well, was it New Sounds from the start, John?
No, I was actually hired here to host All Things Considered and Evening Music, which at that time, Steve, you'll remember the Masterwork Hour.
Ah, yeah.
Which was radio's longest-running show of recorded classical music anywhere in the world. And, I kind of thought I was stepping into some big shoes, but it turned out it was just like a name that WNYC was desperately clinging to out of a sense of history.
And very tight shoes.
And, Steve, you were doing morning music, but your background had been in live radio,
right,
where most people considered you the funniest man in talk radio. At least I did.
And
suddenly you were doing classical music. What about pronouncing all those foreign names and foreign words?
I had
that was the funny
help.
Part.
That was the funny part, right. I had tremendous help. Every single day after the program, I would run into the music library, find out what the program was for the next day, and find out how to pronounce the names. And then I would screw them up anyway when I got to them.
Well, some of those words are really hard to say. But three or four languages, German, Italian, French.
none of which I knew anything about.
That's if you're lucky. That's if they're not feeding you the Czech and Hungarian recordings. And the
right, the names that have no vowels in them.
Another thing I don't look back on nostalgically was the fundraising. It was different in those. I remember I did 13 out of 14 days straight of fundraising, and it was only because they were doing some special that I was spared one day.
And there was a certain hectoring, pleading quality to
we
the fundraising.
We don't have any calls coming.
I don't know how. You folks who've been listening for 20 odd years, I don't know how you did it. I don't know how you put up with us back then.
Lobotomies is the answer. Lobotomies.
It was, yeah, but the fundraising has definitely matured. It went through its awkward teenage phase and has matured into something old and senile.
Although, Steve, you used to do special kind of fundraising. There was the time you kidnapped Mary Parrott Nichols and you held her hostage in lieu of call-ins from the listeners.
Yeah.
Things like that. You had a lot of fun with fundraising.
Yes, I did, as a matter of fact. I called them fundraisers, not fundraisers.
There was a certain War of the Worlds quality to some of your on-air antics during fundraisers back then. I mean, Mary Parrott Nichols, who was our future ex-president for life, as you termed her, you know, sort of descending from a helicopter on the roof of the municipal building.
She was being taken
by
the roof of the municipal
building. But you also imprisoned two of our major donors.
Yes, the Schneidermans.
then, in reality, you were in prison once outside the building, weren't you? Wasn't there a time you were locked?
I got locked in the bathroom and had to navigate my way around the outside of the building.
What happened? The door handle came off?
The door handles came off, and I was locked in the bathroom, and I started to cry.
And I hope you had a long playing record on.
Well, I had a CD, which were new in those days. Mm-hmm. I had no idea how long it ran. It was, I think, ballet music by Jean-Philippe Rameau, which I still probably mispronounce. There I was out on the roof trying to find my way back in here. And when I finally got back in here...
What did you have on your feet, Steve?
Slippers. My slippers that
His
I wear.
His dirty bunny slippers.
And it was cold.
And it was cold. It snowed. It had frozen. And the first thing that happened when I put my foot out there was I broke through ice into ice-cold water. What an adventure it was. If I had only thought, why bother? But instead, I went out on the roof.
Well, you were saved, I think, right? How long before you wound up coming back into the...
It was quite some time. I circumnavigated the building. I came in. I went around to where there was always an engineer on duty in what's called the terminal room, which a name which I could do without. And someone opened the window. I knocked on the window, and someone opened the window and said, "What are you doing here?" I said, "I'm taking, you know, I'm taking a stroll. And I can't repeat what I said to him. But I got back in here and I got on the air and did the newscast.
Well, we moved from the original studios into the places we work out of now. They seemed so new and cutting edge then, and now they look like they've been through a lot of wear and tear. Are you looking forward to the move to the new studios on Varick Street?
New is worse. That's what I say. So the answer is probably no.
The enemy you know as opposed to the enemy you don't know. I am definitely looking forward to it. But, you know, Leonard, this has been the WNYC MO since 1924. It's like you get the new studios and then you just use them to death. Mm-hmm. And, you know, our old FM studio was taken by the Smithsonian, right? Because that was original FM equipment. It was, you know, we were an experimental station before we were 93.9 FM. So, you know, when we moved out of the north end of the hall to this current beautiful, glistening south end of the hall where we live and work, the Smithsonian came in and took all that stuff, and the Brooklyn Museum came and took some of the furniture, and there were the murals. Remember the WPA murals on the wall?
You mean to say the WPA mural is not still out there?
Well, there is one still out there, under glass.
We don't own them, by the way. They're all owned by the city, which is also interesting. But
we were the custodians of those for decades.
Yeah. Well, once Woody Allen was looking for a set for Radio Days, and he was looking for some old station, and somebody suggested that he come and look at our studios, the ones we used to broadcast out of, And he was horrified. He said, no, I want something that looks like the old days. That looks like it's been destroyed since the old days. So many people have called in with memories of the best shows, and they all seem to be ones in which guests acted out. People remember the Jerry Lewis show. Jerry Lewis was so awful. It was unbelievable.
He was an abysmal guest, yeah.
And then Gene Simmons, who was even worse. If that's possible. So I guess when people think back to the happy moments, it's the worst moments. Do you think, does that happen to you as well?
You know, when people talk about, you know, Soundcheck, for example, I will think of Sinead O'Connor, who was, to Soundcheck, what Jerry Lewis was to you. You know, just really kind of ad hominem attacks for no particular apparent reason. And for some reason, we tend to go there.
Did you actually have Jerry Lewis here in this studio?
Yes. Sitting in the seat you're sitting in right now.
Oh, my goodness. I'd better... I don't know what. I'd better not say.
Don't have your trousers dry cleaned for a while. No, he was just... he was really so awful. I was on the verge of saying, now I know why Dean left you. What took him so long? Anyway, I want to thank you both so much for coming by to help me remember the good old days. And I wish you would leave so that I could have the longevity record here, but it looks like you're going to go on and on and on.
Well, may you have another happy 23 years at
you
least.
Too. You too.
Congratulations, yeah. Rookie.
You can hear John Schaefer following this show. And Steve?
And thanks, by the way, for my break. I've really always wanted to kind of work in radio, and this is the opportunity I've been looking for. So thank you, Lennon.
The no show is back on.
I don't know.
It isn't?
I don't know about no show.
Steve, you're not going to promote yourself?
There's nothing to promote at this moment. I'm going
I'm
going upstairs to break down the program director's door and have
a friendly discussion. I'll go
him.
Up there with you. We got to have you back. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Leonard.
Congratulations.